All right. Good evening, everybody. Chris Lee, Graham Doty, Alfred Esmond here. We scheduled this live stream for 9:30 Central, thinking that would be after this game was over. It's the College World Series. Of course it didn't happen like that. We've got Texas A&M and Tennessee in the ninth inning. The Vols holding a 6-4 lead, one out in the ninth, man on first, and this is Hayden's shot at the plate. So if you are catching us on the rebound, know that's where we're starting from. Anyway, I'm Chris Lee, joined by Graham Doty and Alfred Esmond. A reminder, the stream brought to you by BetOnline, your number one source for the NBA Finals and Stanley Cup playoffs this season. Every stat, matchup, and even live odds and spreads while the games are being played. When the game is over, head on to our online casino, get in on a game of blackjack or poker. Run one with over 150 slots games. Head to the website today. Get on in the action. Use promo code BELIEVE. That's BLEAV, all caps, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet online. The game starts here. All right. Combs has just struck out Hayden Schott for out two. And now it is up to, who have we got here?
This is...
Is this Ted Burton? Ted Burton.
Yes.
Okay. All right. You guys are ahead of me. So.
I will try our best. Yeah.
Watching you guys react or not react or whatever. So.
I think a balk just got called. Yeah.
The balk was called.
Okay.
He tried to pick off to first and there was nobody there.
So Appel moves to third on an 0-1 count now to Burton.
You're about 10 or 15 seconds ahead of me. Not as bad as it's been.
He's smiling about it.
Mm-hmm. Laughing it off. You got to have nerves of steel if you're Aaron Combs up there.
Combs is what, a junior?
Mm-hmm.
Here comes
a hood. That is... The ability to have a smile in that spot is that's tough.
Nuts.
Too.
Yeah.
Burton had an awful at bat last time. And now he's down 0-2. Just taking a real hack at that one and coming up empty.
Wild pitch.
Oh, my.
Run scores. 6-5 game.
You still got to get a man on first, though.
Mm-hmm.
Goodness gracious, that held a plane for a minute and it just got over Stark. You don't see many like that.
Mm-mm.
All right, now's a spot where Burton's last two at-bats have not been good, and these guys have been chasing some stuff all night. They've been trying to get the big hit at the right time all game, and you've seen them start to press a little bit. And there it is, strike three. Swung at some kind of breaking ball away.
Looked like a slider.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's what it was.
Slider away.
Wow. Zero dog pile.
I would hate to be on a dog pile. I mean, that's just.
To be buried?
At the bottom.
To be buried?
Yeah, that would be. That's a nightmare waiting to happen.
That's fractured ribs.
Yeah, among other
Something.
Things. Anyway, congratulations to the Tennessee Vols, your 2024 national champions, as they show Rick Barnes and Peyton Manning and Morgan Wallen in the stands. Only team since Miami to be the number one seed and win the tournament. Vols took home a lot of hardware this year. They took the SEC regular season championship, the SEC tournament, the number one seed in this. Checked about all the spots on the bingo cards. About the only ones left would have been preseason number one and maybe not tying for the SEC regular season championship. But, I mean, we're nitpicking. I mean, that's – not a lot of teams, maybe no teams have ever checked the spots on the bingo cards like Tennessee just did. This will go down as a team for the ages, because, again, you just don't see a lot of teams that are able to do what they did, not just the run in Omaha, but just the complete body of work. It was a team that had a little bit of everything, a team that had starting pitching, had a good bullpen. Defense could be a little shaky at times, but that was really one of the stories of the game tonight, I thought. Tennessee's defense making some plays, and it's been the case throughout the tournament, too, at times. Power up and down the lineup, five guys that hit 20 home runs. I mean, you know, if you're looking for stuff they didn't do, they didn't run a lot, but when you're hitting doubles and home runs, you maybe don't do that. Right. But about as complete a team as I've ever seen, and I think they'll probably announce the MVP as we're doing this, but I'm guessing, guys, it's got to be Dylan Dreiling, right?
Yeah. You are correct. They're showing him right now. So, yeah, he is the most outstanding player.
And yeah, I don't know if he's the best player on the team, but he's the guy that, and I've said this for a couple games now, he is the guy that I just don't want to face if I'm a pitcher, because he doesn't get himself out. You've got to throw strikes. And if you're going to get him out, it's probably going to be, you know, on a pitcher's pitch. You know, he might take one at the bottom of the zone that's a borderline pitch. But, I mean, you would see other guys in this lineup at times. You'd see Blake Burke chase some stuff. You'd see Christian Moore get over anxious. But Dreiling was just the guy that just was so cool at the plate at all times. Hit the big home run, I guess, tonight. Hit the one yesterday to put Tennessee ahead for the first time. They're interviewing. I'm presuming he's the MVP. So anyway, Alfred, let me let you start. For full disclosure, we had a daughter's birthday, which are all day events around the Lee household. So I was going to get to watch about half of this, which I did. And so let me get your thoughts on tonight. What you felt stood out.
Yeah, I guess I'll start with the man on the mound that started, Xander Seacrest. We've seen it really since that Vanderbilt game where he only went two innings in the regular season at Hawkins Field. Since that moment, he's been great in every start he's had on through the postseason and even through tonight. 5 1/3, 6 hits. He gave up a lot of hits, but he was in control the entire time, giving up one earned run, walked only one, and struck out 7. And he went deep into this game. I think he finished, 88 total pitches. So he threw a lot of pitches today. And, you know, everyone knew, I think we were going to get Seacrest in this spot tonight if it came to a game 3 on Monday, and it did. So props to him for coming out and getting a great start. Nate Snead came in as well. I think we all thought we were going to see him possibly. He went 34 pitches, gave up 2 hits, 1 earned run there, walked 1 and struck out 1. He did good for Seacrest to kind of, you know, went right when he came out of the game and then, got in a little bit of trouble. That's when Loy came in and things really got dicey as A&M cut the lead in half, 6-3. But then Kirby Cannell, he gave up. It was the first hit he gave up was a knock into the shortstop position. Ariel Antigua came in. It was very clear on that play why he was in. It was because of his defense. He made a great sliding attempt at it. And he, you know, threw it the first. It wasn't made in time. But Cannell strikes out 2 to get out of that inning. And then Aaron Combs comes in and delivers the national title winning save. So great stuff all around. Vols pitching. Play of the game for me, obviously you could say the Dreiling home run. The Hunter Ensley slide was unreal. And a lot of that, I think, could go on Jackson Appel, because I think, you know, you could make the case he flat out missed that tag and he just, you know, had a blunder there. But Ensley's awareness to kind of scoot around and slide his body around it to extend the lead even more made the difference. I mean, this is a 6-5 win here. That one run was the difference in this game. So that was awesome and huge for them. And I guess I'll continue with Dylan Dreiling. Out of anyone this tournament, 3 home runs in all 3 games. You couldn't have asked for a better Omaha performance than that. Great stuff from him. Very deserving of tournament player, or the player of the tournament award. And Tennessee, just for the home run record, they don't beat LSU, but they finish 185. So 4 shy of beating LSU's 97 record, solidly in second. Great year for Tennessee, Chris. You nailed it on the head. you know, complete team top to bottom. Pitching started to come alive, you know, throughout the season, especially into the postseason. The bats were just electrifying. One of the best batting lineups we'll see, I think, in college baseball for years to come. And just great stuff. And I guess before, you know, I let Graham go, I'll speak on Texas A&M in just a second. Texas A&M had a great year. I mean, we've talked about it all along for them in Omaha, these injuries, how they were going to affect them. It did not affect them. They came up one run shy of tying this game and sending it into the bottom of the ninth for a shot to win the national title. And it was great stuff all around. Hayden Schott with another incredible game, 3 for 5 for him with an RBI. Appel, despite that kind of blunder defensively at the plate on Ensley, 3 for 5 at the plate. He did his job swinging. Rough go at it today for Lavalette. I'm sure he, you know, wanted to do better. Maybe his injury he's been suffering from got to him a little bit, but 0 for 5 at the plate today for him. Or one, he went 1 for 5, excuse me, but we've seen him do beyond better than that. And I think, you know, overall, though, A&M's got to be proud of where they're at. It was a team that up until yesterday hadn't lost this tournament whatsoever, so great stuff from A&M this season. Got to give props to them and all the fans out there. If you guys are tuning into this and watching it, a valiant effort against one of the best college baseball teams we've seen in quite some time.
By the way, guys, since you guys a box score in the private chat, in Perfect. Case you want to check that, fact check anything. So anyway, yes. Graham, your turn.
That was all well said, Alfred. I think, first of all, congratulations to Tennessee, program record and SEC record, 60 wins in a single season.
Wow.
That is amazing. You know, last night we kind of touched on, you know, who both teams kind of were feeling good about their pitching situation, starting pitching, bullpen coming into this game. Who would chase the starter first and mission accomplished? Or for Tennessee in that Lampkin over 20 pitches in the first inning. Christian Moore, second player ever to hit a leadoff home run in the championship game. So Tennessee set the tone early. One thing I was looking at, I was curious just about the temperature. Like, I know it sounds kind of silly to talk about, but it was 100 degrees at first pitch. And like, they showed people in the stands and like, you could just tell it was hot. So didn't know how much of an impact, if any, that would have. Both teams seemed to handle that well. And for me, like, kind of what stands out to me for Texas A&M, this is going to be a sequence where Jim Schlossnagle could potentially have nightmares. The sixth inning, seventh inning, eighth inning, and even the ninth inning, Texas A&M gets 2 runners on base all of those innings, and they only get 4 runs across in that stretch. So, I mean, that was, you know, if you're Texas A&M, those are the innings that you're going to look back and just say, hey, if we could have got a break here or there, who knows what could have happened. But Tennessee, again, congratulations. I mean, first number one seed since Miami to win the whole thing. They've been so good and so consistent all season long. And Chris, as you said, they don't really have a weakness. They are just solid and steady in so many different categories, and they are the best team in the country this season and an SEC record 60 wins.
You know, one thing I noticed tonight, and again, I didn't catch all of it, but I think I caught probably more of the big stuff than not. If people are joining me, we had a family birthday tonight, and that was just – it was not going to be in the cards for me to watch everything. But when I did see it, and I think this is backed up by the box score, one thing that we've said about A&M, and look, this is a credit to Tennessee as much as it is a knock on A&M. They just do not chase. They don't swing out of the zone. They don't try to do too much tonight. Tonight, I felt like the moment they didn't handle as well as Tennessee did. Like Alfred pointed it out, Combs throws that wild, you know, Combs makes that balk where there's nobody at first, and he just kind of laughs it off. You know, it's like, hey, I'll live to fight another day. A&M, you saw a lot of guys, and even their veteran guys, Burton, Laviolette's a veteran, he's a sophomore. You saw them coming to the plate. And again, Tennessee threw some guys with some terrific breaking stuff. And guys with good stuff can make you look bad. So I don't want to discount that. But A&M's seen some good pitchers this year, and I've seen them not do that. I just felt like they were trying to do too much in some of their bats, when they did make stuff happen at times, Tennessee turned, was it one or two big double plays? And maybe the biggest play of the game is when they've got, oh gosh, I can't remember who it was at the plate, but they bounce one to over first. And you kind of like know from watching baseball in the back of your head, usually what usually gets into the outfield. And they bounce one, I think, over Burke's head. You tell me if I remember this right. And Christian Moore was playing way over to the first base side of the bag. Got it on the hop and made the out. If they don't get that one, I can't remember if a run scores. The inning certainly goes on. It just felt like spots like that, either Tennessee let A&M get itself out, either doing stuff like that, made great pitches. I thought you had a lot of guys had great breaking stuff tonight. I mean, last pitch of the game, Combs threw one of the better sliders he's probably thrown in the tournament. I just thought those things tonight were separator. I thought it was a little uncharacteristic of A&M, but again, good pitching will do that to you, and give credit to Tennessee, whether it was Sechrist who got a lot of big outs early, whether it was Kirby Cannell getting that huge two strikeouts, I think it was, to end the eighth with, what was it, two guys on. I mean, they could have tied the game right there, but didn't. It felt like when the Vols had to make a pitch, they got A&M to chase out of the zone, or they made a defensive play. And I think that might have been the difference tonight, because you look up and each team's got 13 hits here.
Yeah, offensively, it was well-balanced when you look at it, just at hits and stuff. Also, Tennessee, Vol fans in the chat, don't explode here. Tennessee made some errors to kind of keep A&M in the game a little bit. What I'm talking about in particular was there was a little bunt swing, check swing play. Sechrist and Stark went after it, kind of right in front of the plate. And Stark almost, I think he kind of forced a throw over the first, and Burke just was not ready. I think Blake Burke thought he was going to eat it, which is what I thought should have happened there. And the ball gets away, and A&M puts a runner in scoring position against a team that led the country in walks. You did not want to do that. Did not want to do that. And that's kind of what kept them in the game. And even A&M's pitching, there were stretches where they were really well. I mean, Josh Stewart came in, and we said, Graham, we were texting, and you said, you know, they were going to bring him out if they needed him, and they needed them in that spot because Tennessee was threatening. And Stewart comes in, and for 2 1/3, gives up only two hits, strikes out one, and gives up no earned runs. The other thing I did not see, guys, Evan Aschenbeck giving up 3 earned runs, which were the Dreiling homer and then that Ensley run. And that wasn't really on him. That was a crushed ball by Kavaris Tears that I thought was gone. That ended up in the park. And Hunter Ensley, I think it was two outs too, because Hunter Ensley was just running around the bases as fast as he could. And that play at home was, you know, Jackson Appel and Ensley making a good slide and whatnot, but that's one thing I didn't expected. And you kind of could sense then A&M certainly made it interesting, down 6-1, coming back to make it 6-5. They certainly made it interesting, but when Tennessee went up 6-1, you sort of felt that was a lot of wind that got sucked out of A&M a little. And props to the Aggies for kind of coming back and making it a ball game, because they slowly but surely cracked into the bullpen with Loy and Cannell out there. But great stuff from Tennessee. And Aschenbeck, you know, really, it was just kind of something I didn't expect to happen when he was on the mound.
Alfred, I'll ask you to look up his outings this year. I will bet you that was his worst pitching line of the season. I'm going to go back to something we said in game one when A&M was up 9-2 and Dreiling, I think, hit that home run. They got another run. They made A&M get into the pen. I remember saying at the time, I think you would prefer not to use Aschenbeck right here if you can do it, but they hit so well that you might have to go there. That's exactly what happened. He threw, 40-something pitches. Didn't throw yesterday. I mean, maybe with a 1-0 lead, you bring him in the sixth, he closes it out. It's a different series. Maybe tonight, if he's a little fresher, he doesn't give up 3 runs. And I'm not taking anything away from Tennessee. Actually, it's credit to Tennessee that had to go to him on Friday. But that is the thing about short series baseball. Even when you are losing a game and going to lose a game, you can do some stuff to push the other team that has ramifications later in the series. And I just wonder what happens if Friday looks different. They don't have to throw Aschenbeck in that spot. Does it look different? And here's another thing, guys. I'm like, when they threw Snead that early, Tennessee did, and yanked him. And I know his stuff wasn't nearly what it was. But when you go to him, like when you pull a pitcher every time, when you pull Kirby Cannell, like if something happens, a bad bounce or two, I keep wishing for one of these series where we get a 1-1 and then we get a game three that goes like into 17 innings just to see the stuff coaches do just for the heck of it. And that's the thing, like even when Tony Vitello's making pitching moves there late, like you may have a guy that, all right, he matches up better. But once you pull a guy like that, you're done. And, you know, they went through what? They went through five guys tonight. They've been through some other guys. You know, we didn't know if Combs would come back after last. I mean, you figured he would if everything was on the line, and he did. But, like, even he wasn't as sharp tonight. He gave up two runs in an inning. Just watch. That's a lot of words. But just watching the pitching in these scenarios just to me is fascinating. And I think Tennessee – forcing Aschenbeck in game one ended up being a real key to the series.
Yeah, it did. And I think even tonight, I mean, there was talk too. They had Josh Stewart up, but they panned the camera to Aschenbeck, and they were like, they might have to bring him early, and that would be trouble. I mean, Aschenbeck can certainly do it. I'm not saying he can't, but that would just put a lot of pressure on A&M. And I think he came in kind of at an appropriate time, and it wasn't really as big of a deal, but it was something that kind of rattled A&M a good bit. And Chris, I pulled this up for you if you want me to tell you. The last loss he had goes all the way back to May 22nd against Mississippi State. He pitched 2/3, gave up a hit, no earned runs, which is weird, but I think it was some scenario in that game. Looking at other starts, he does not give up runs. I mean, I'm going back. 3 earned runs was the most he gave up all year. The most besides that was 2, and that was... Yeah, and the most was 2 before that, and that was way back in April against Vandy and Bama. So he did not give up runs this season. It was very obscure, and that in the end was the difference. Again, credit to A&M for bouncing back and making it very interesting at the end. But that Ensley base running and then the 2-run homer by Dreiling really put a lot, or really sucked the wind out of A&M sales and just kind of, you know, put a lot of control in Tennessee's favor, and they end up on top.
Yeah, and mention of A&M not having Sadeo in the series was a killer. I agree. I think they have him. Maybe it plays out a little differently. But let's not forget Tennessee also. Good grief.
A.J. Russell?
A.J. Russell. Yeah, Tennessee didn't have him most of the year. So I think people tend to forget that a little bit because he's been out so long. But, yeah, both teams were down a key arm in this one. Of course, A&M down Braden Montgomery, and maybe that would have made a difference. I always thought the Sadeo injury was more harmful to the makeup of their team than the Montgomery. And Montgomery wasn't hitting great the last part of the year. Now, that probably would have turned around. He's going to be taken most likely one of the top 10 guys here in the draft come out up in July. So, anyway, yeah, other thoughts on this. Graham, we've talked a bit. It's your turn again.
I mean, to me, just Tennessee takes advantage of their opportunities. Just looking at some of the numbers right now, they had 4 2-out RBIs. So, like, they delivered. And the final number for runners left on base for Texas A&M ends up being 9. And, again, a large chunk of that is the 6th through the 9th inning. And to me, that's one of the biggest keys of the game. A&M, they finished with the same number of hits as Tennessee does. Just Tennessee and Dylan Dreiling, when Tennessee needed somebody to step up and make a play, he was absolute money all tournament long and well-deserved most outstanding player this week in Omaha.
Yeah, if you tell me that A&M is going to throw Lampkin and Aschenbeck tonight – and Tennessee gets 6 extra base hits, 2 of those being homers, I think you take that any day.
Yeah, absolutely. that happened. Graham, the comment about RBIs with two outs, every run they had in yesterday's game too came with two outs. So that's been the luck of the draw that they've gotten. And, you know, it's one of those that's baseball things that happened to them. So props to them for being on that side of the coin.
Yeah. And the only one of the ones that wasn't was a leadoff home run by Christian Moore.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a holy home run and then just timely hits tonight for the balls.
Who was Chris? The LSU player in 97 was the other one. Can you remember who that was? Hey, they flashed his name.
That's before I followed it. What was the question?
The only other guy to have a leadoff homer in game
Bobby
3.
Brandon Larson?
That sounds right. I think that sounds Brandon right. Larson, I'll double check.
40-run home runs. I think it was that year or the year after was a first or second round pick by the Reds and played in the bigs a little bit.
Right.
But he was kind of a college wonder that didn't really. And that may not even be him.
So. Right. I have it right here. Danny Higgins. That's who I couldn't think of.
Yeah. Never heard of him.
So that was the other guy. Just, I saw it. Side note. Sorry. But yeah, I mean, that was the only other one. And that just goes to show you how unreal, if we could talk about him for a sec, how unreal Christian Moore has been. And it's kind of a shame too, because he had to sort of play, I guess this is going to be a weird way to put it, but play underneath the shadow of guys like Condon and Caglione, who got all this attention, you know, otherwise, and rightfully so. But, you know, any other year, Christian Moore is, you know, sitting there waiting for a Golden Spikes award, and I'm sure he's not going to complain. I mean, he's sitting on the stage right now with a trophy in his hand. So props to him. And I saw his draft stock go up as well. I mean, I think he's up in the top 20 now. So he's going to be, we're going to hear his name during draft night at some point. So props to him for a great year.
Yeah, I think so too. Just the biggest question for him is position. I mean, like touched on it. He's built like a linebacker or a running back. And you just have to, once he finds his home, like, and he starts getting reps, like he'll take off.
I think he's a right fielder. I don't know if I may be alone in that opinion, but I think he's a right fielder. Although I don't know how the outfield arm would be. I mean, you don't see a lot of second baseman play outfield. Maybe a left fielder, that might be a better fit. But speaking of Golden Spike, how did Jack Caglione not get invited? Guy hit 30-something home runs, was the number one starter, or not the number one. He was number three, but he was the best starter.
Yeah,
on a team that was one of the last four teams standing. I don't know how. I mean, it was a tough year. I know Tennessee fans are griped about Moore not winning Player of the Year, but I mean, you know, nobody's going to beat Charlie. I mean, Alfred, we did our awards. We debated a little bit.
Yeah.
Condon's going to be everybody's pick, and I get it, and that's kind of what we went with. But I said, hey, maybe this should be a little bit more of a discussion between him and Caglione. I think people, for whatever reason, when you do a lot of things, they tend to gravitate towards the loudest things you do and maybe ignore some of the other stuff. And Christian Moore certainly had a case to be made too with his SEC numbers, but it was Hagen Smith any other year would have been the guy too. I mean, Hagen Smith had an ERA of a buck something in a year where the average ERA in college baseball, you know, was 660 something. I think it was. I mean, that's like having a 0.98 ERA or something like that. It's crazy. It was like that Bob Gibson year, except, I mean, Gibson did it when everybody was pitching, and it was unbelievable. I think the comp I've made is the Pedro Martinez year when he had that unbelievable year in the steroid era of college baseball. What's that?
98, 99.
Yeah. I think it was 98, but I mean, it was an incredible year for talent. This league just keeps getting better and better and better.
It's insane. Yeah, it's insane. And even Hagen Smith, he was for a while, Condon's very well deserving of it, but for a while, when I look at his pitching numbers, you know, respect to the hitters up there, but I was like, I don't know how you can't give this guy this award. The ERA went up over two, but it's 204 over 84 innings. He has 161 strikeouts in 84 innings. That's phenomenal stuff. That opposing batting average is what made me drop my jaw to the floor. 144 to opposing hitters. You could not hit on him. So he was great as well. But I going back to our main thing about Caglione, I am also shocked he didn't get invited, even strictly based off his hitting. I mean, I think I have to look at Bizzana, and obviously we didn't watch a lot of Bizzana because we're the SEC, but Caglione, I think, could have easily gotten an invite. And it just goes back to Christian Moore. Tennessee fans, I get it. You know, he's very well up there. Chris and I debated this back and forth for our SEC Player of the Year for a good bit. And any other year, Christian Moore, I think it's an invite pretty much. Maybe there's a few where not, but for the most part, he gets an invite. So, but once again, I mean, he's a player who's going to get his name called relatively early in the draft. And he's someone, you know, I think every college baseball fan in general is going to remember for a good bit of time. So that's saying something in and of itself.
Yeah, I think this is a year that you saw four guys. Although I don't know how often we name a pitcher player of the year, but just play four guys in a lot of years would have been a player of the year.
Mm-hmm.
That's just where the league is going. We talked about how you've already got three guys from last year's title series make the bigs. And I don't think you'll see that this year. I think you got a lot of future major leaguers that we just saw play. I don't know that you got guys quick to the majors like Cruz. Well, Cruz isn't there yet, but Langford and Hurst and Waldrop and Skeens. And Cruz is going to be there maybe before the end of the year. So,
yeah, but still, it'll be a little different.
You're going to see a lot of dudes. Oh, man, the number of guys that you're going to see in the majors out of this series. Let's all make a guess. I'm going to count mine up.
What's the over under?
Okay. More Christian Moore's going to make it. Burke's going to make it. I think Amick's going to make it. I'm not quite as big on Amick as some of the scouts are because of the consistency issue in the defense. But I think better chance than not that he will. Dreiling's major leaguer. I think Tears is a major leaguer. So that's what, five alone out of the hitting. I think Dean Curley's going to have a chance one day. Hard to tell. He's a freshman. So that's six. Out of guys that threw tonight, I think Snead's got a chance. He's got to strike some more guys out. Beam will make it. So that's, I don't know, six, seven, eight. Laviolette will make it. Gavin Grohovac, I think, is going to make it. He's a freshman.
Cortez.
Prager will make it. Jackson Appel will make it. I mean, we're closing in on a dozen guys right there alone.
Yeah.
Braden Montgomery, too. He didn't even play.
Oh, yeah, Montgomery. Chris Cortez will make it.
Mm-hmm.
That's just where we are with college baseball now.
That was at least 15.
it was a lot. It was a lot. We can set our own team up with who we just named. Of those guys.
And there'll be some freshmen that barely play. I mean, Caden Kent, maybe. There'll be somebody that barely played. I mean, remember Wyatt Langford had four at-bats as a true freshman.
Mm-hmm. You never know. See why these two teams played for a national championship.
It's almost like just a little bit.
You could see it. There's a lot of – the other thing, too, speaking of freshmen, with A&M, A&M fans, if you're watching, I think, guys, they have a really good road ahead. I mean, I think they set up – I have a feeling we'll talk about them a good bit in the offseason heading into next year, because the lineup you saw without Montgomery, that's mostly what you're going to get next year, I'd have to imagine, with those guys. You're going to get Caden Kent. I believe we said you're going to get Laviolette back. You're going to get all these other hitters that are on top. I think we said Laviolette might be one of the best players coming back in the SEC, period. So you're going to get most of that lineup back. I'll have to look into their pitching more, but – when you're talking about your offense top to bottom, A&M has the potential to set up one of the top lineups in the conference once again, even without Montgomery, because you saw what they could do this Omaha trip, and they're going to be a national title threat next year.
Yeah. They'll be loaded. The only thing that I would be, I guess, cautious or nervous about is all eyes in Austin, Texas. Yeah. What in the world the Texas Longhorns are going to do?
I saw something. Yeah, go ahead. I was going to say, I saw something. It was a post someone made. It was kind of funny to me. Do you think Texas did this on purpose on the day A&M went to the national title or was playing for one? It's kind of like steal headlines or that sort of thing.
That, but also, like, it is a Monday. Like,
right.
It just kind of worked out. But am I surprised that they made that decision and let everybody know hours before first pitch of game three? No,
right. The timing's peculiar. I think it just that rivalry is going to be something we're going to enjoy once they join next year for every sport, not just baseball.
Yeah,
but
sometimes see teams at the Final Four make a coaching change to get on the screen. I thought you don't know why the timing is for anything, but I mean, I think we all thought the same thing.
Right.
That's Texas trying to get a little rest.
Yeah.
At a time when eyes are already on Texas.
Yeah. And David Pierce, like, he's a really, really good coach. He's been in the NCAA tournament with three different programs. He went to Omaha three times with the Longhorns. Like, just like somebody's going to scoop him up. It's going to be interesting because it's kind of late now. I'll be fascinated to see where he ends up.
I will too. Names I've just heard for the Texas job for anyone interested. Obviously, Schloss. This is all hearsay, but these are the names I've heard. A lot of it's D1 baseball, who has a lot of good information about the sport. Schlossnagel, obviously, it's kind of why we brought it up. Backich over at Clemson is a possibility, I've heard. Going beyond that, Tony Vitello's kind of died off a little, but I mean, if we're throwing Schlossnagel in there, I guess we'll throw him in the mix. Again, this national title, I don't think that's going to happen, but I don't even really think Schloss is going to happen out of any of them, but Backich is a big name I've heard as well. There's many others, but it's the most attractive job or one of the most attractive jobs you could get in college baseball.
With coaching jobs, you just don't ever know. You don't know if there's a family situation or a reason something's a better fit here or there, or if there's tension between a coach and administrators. And I'm not aiming that at anybody. That's just a general statement. What I was hearing tonight is that A&M was probably going to come hard after Vitello because of age. And that makes a lot of sense. Of all the guys, he and Eric Backich would be the youngest two, I believe. And again, coming after a guy and a guy taking a job are two completely different things. I'm not telling you what is or isn't going to happen. But I did note in Kendall Rogers' article today, you know, I think the order was intentional and he went Schlossnagel, Vitello, and Backich. And I think what's going to happen is they're going to make one of those two tell them no.
Right.
Of course, yeah. Chris Delaconte, the AD and Schlossnagel worked together at TCU. I think Vitello was on one of the TCU staffs too.
Yeah.
So there's relationships there. And Backich just makes it. I mean, Backich is one that I think if Texas comes calling and they get down to, I mean, that's a pretty good fallback.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
But I mean, I don't think Clemson can resource wise come close to competing with what Texas can do.
No. It's a very good job. Like I've done a few games there. Like facilities, great, stadium, fantastic. But if nowadays, no matter what the sport is, if you're a head coach, your first or second question is going to be what's your NIL situation? I mean, that's where we are. And like depending on what Clemson's is, Texas really, really, really cares about college baseball, and they have for a very long time. Not saying that Clemson doesn't, but Texas has a very rich college baseball history.
Yeah. It's going to be very interesting.
Right. One of the top stories heading into this offseason, I guess because it's officially upon us now, 30 minutes, almost an hour into it.
Do you think that everything will be like, will we have an answer this week or will it drag longer than that?
You have to.
I
don't think you can let that go on. I mean,
by the way, the transfer portal for baseball closes July the 2nd.
Yeah.
Mm. A lot of busy stuff happening between now and then. The other thing too, We hinted on it for the resources' sake. That's the advantage too, I think, about this Texas job. If you know what you're doing with portal stuff, you're in the best position at any college anywhere. You could make the case for it. You know, you see it for them with football, basketball, and even baseball, just based off how active it's already been with certain teams. They spend their NIL money well. that's the thing about like Schlossnagel. A&M is right there neck and neck with that team for NIL money, and that's what makes it hard. Tennessee's kind of getting there. I think that's a knock Clemson too much. Clemson's kind of, like you said, Chris, they're not on the level of these other schools with the big name coaches we're talking about. And so I think that's kind of the disadvantage you face if you're them holding on to Bakich, and it'll be interesting, but it just seems to make sense. And again, I mean, you set yourself up nice at Texas. The standard that comes with that is just win a national title.
You know who the biggest winner is going to be this next week, don't you?
Who would that be?
Sports agents.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Clients.
Oh, yeah.
I'm telling you, it is coming. I don't know. I feel like the first coach to make $1 million was not too long ago in baseball. You're about to see, I think, several of them.
Yeah.
At least 10 for sure.
Right.
I mean, let's see who's there.
Who's the Jimmy Sexton of the college baseball world?
I think Jimmy Sexton may finally have a couple of
baseball. Does he really?
I'm not reporting. I could have sworn I heard that. I can make one phone call. In fact, I'll make a text right now, see if he answers. But yeah. Not Jimmy Sexton, but somebody I can go to get answers.
Right.
I'm not that.
Right. Well, I got a list here. This is as of June, recent 13th. These are the 10 highest paid coaches in college baseball. You go Maneri at South Carolina. He's at $1.3 million. LeMoyne's $1.3 million. Van Horn is $1.4 million. Schloss is $1.46 million. Vitello is $1.5 million. Bianco is $1.625
million. Corbin's going to be up there. It's just private.
Right.
Corbin's over there, too.
Yeah.
Okay. That's probably why they have 9 then. Actually, I thought that was peculiar on this website. I was like going through it. I'm like, this isn't 10, but I'll keep going. But anyway, Jay Johnson, 1.65. O'Sullivan's 1.755. And then here's Tim Corbin, 1.9, just below 2, according to this.
Was Bianco on the list?
Yeah.
He was.
Okay.
He's one. Oh, I just had it. Shoot. 1.6. 1.6.
And I would think I think Nick Mangione would be arriving there before too long.
Shortly. Right. Whoever gets this Texas job too, I would think maybe.
Yeah.
It could be.
Somebody brought up the comments, Frank Anderson for the Texas job. I don't think they'll go there. Anderson was head coach at Houston not too long ago.
I heard a lot.
He settled into a nice little a really nice spot for him.
This is Tennessee people saying this on the staff, but it seems like to me, whenever they talk about Frank Anderson, he's kind of like riding his career out as Tennessee's pitching coach for the duration.
He's would be on the older side for sure.
It's a great, on paper.
Go ahead. Let me see.
No, you're good. On paper, he's great. I mean, that's a great place to go, Tennessee's pitching coach, but it seems like from what I hear, it's like kind of he just kind of wants to ride it out. Could we never know though? Schloss is 53.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's interesting. Max Wiener should be a target. Jay Paul said that he's been. You want to know why A&M got as good as they got this year? He's a big part of that. So he could be on the list for a lot of people.
It's just the thing about the SEC and this, like Tennessee struck gold. You don't really see a lot of SEC programs hire an assistant coach who's never been a head coach before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like Tennessee went out on that limb and obviously 7 years in, multiple trips to Omaha and now a national champion. So like as far as like all the money and resources put into college baseball now, like you have to nail
right
your college baseball hire now.
Yeah. By the way, Augie Garrido coached to what, 77-ish?
What?
He was the last Texas coach before
before Pierce?
Before Pierce. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
I'd forgotten he was the last one. But Pierce was there 8 years. It didn't seem like it.
Yeah, it goes by fast. And again, he went to Omaha 3 times and they let him go. I'm looking at Ron Polk retired in 2008 and he's 80 right now. So he's still good shape. You'll see him around town. He'll speak on campus.
Yeah, you see him in, you'll see him in Hoover.
Yeah,
when I was a lot in Hoover.
When I was in the Cape Cod Baseball League, like it would be no big deal at all if you look over and Ron Polk is, you know, just hanging out behind home plate in the Cape Cod Baseball League, just checking in on a lot of his former, like current and former players at that time.
Yeah. All right, let's circle back. We got a lot of people joining us late. We have pretty much hit all elements of the game earlier, so you can go back and check that. But I'll just we'll just kind of start over and reset some thoughts on Tennessee's victory over A&M to take the national title. I talked about how complete a team this was, and again, I think I called it, and it wasn't hard to pick because Dylan Dreiling set a record with 11 RBIs in the College World Series final and just came up with a big hit every time they needed one. And I just thought the Vols made the plays when they matter tonight. The strikeouts on the breaking balls, they look like the looser team, the more prepared team for the moment. And that's what stood out most to me. Graham?
Yeah, you touched on it earlier, Chris, just the emotion aspects of it. Tennessee, you could tell they were into the crowd, feeding off the crowd. The crowd provided energy and Texas A&M a lot throughout the course of the night, just kind of stoic looks on their face. And Tennessee was just able to feed off all the energy. You knew both fan bases were going to be fired up, two teams trying to win their first title ever. And to me, the big thing in this one, again, Texas A&M, I know I keep touching on it, but two base runners in the 6th, 7th, 8th, and 9th, and they only get four runs out of all of that. So Tennessee, they got the timely hits tonight, and when they needed it the most, they had different guys coming out of the bullpen, and they got the job done.
For me, I said it at the beginning, I guess I'll repeat myself so everyone watching can go see me say it twice. Tennessee, top to bottom, Chris said this too, very complete team. I think one of the best teams we've seen in a long time. I mean, it's why they broke the number one overall seed curse that has lasted since 99 when Miami won it. They did it off of pitching. They did it off of the powerful lineup they had that was just shy to LSU in 97, and that's it. It was big names all across the lineup. Dylan Dreiling had a World Series final that will be etched for a long time by a lot of people. Three home runs every game, two clutch ones in the game. One got them the lead to keep them alive. The other extended their lead to set up a rally that got the Vols, you know, the big lead sort of to go into this game and close it out, even with A&M closing in. Props to the Aggies for that. Texas A&M, I think the biggest story for them, and people were saying it in our chat, and we mentioned it a little bit, the Sedeo injury, out of all the injuries, I think hurt the most. I really, because that would have been that second game starter, and who knows where this would have gone. But with that being said, Tennessee went against what the Aggies had, and the Aggies had a lot. If you're an A&M fan, you got to feel good. You're going to have to feel good, and you got to feel good about where you're at heading into next year. You're going to be a threat for a national title again, just based off what I see in the lineup. And hey, it was just a great College World Series. Only right that it went to three games. And top to bottom, Tennessee gave everyone around college baseball a really good season. I mean, regular season title, Hoover title, and now national title. You can't ask for anything more than that. And a 60-win season is something you don't see every day. So congrats to the Vols and Tony Vitello. Congrats as well to Texas A&M and Jim Schlossnagel on a great year that went up until the final game. And that's a wrap on the 2024 college baseball season.
Yeah, we've now had
60 wins, by the way, the most for any team since 19
ever. Oh, 89. Sorry, I did not say ever.
The most for an SEC team ever.
Okay, right.
Well, nobody's done it since 89, which I'm assuming is going to be a West Coast team.
You know what? The 89 team, and you look this one up. I'll see if I'm right. I was that the A&M team, and this was before I covered it, but there was an A&M team, I think Chuck Knobloch was on it, that went like 59-8 or something crazy and got beat in a super regional. That might be that team. If not, I bet that team won 50-something games, I believe. And I think they had a single-digit number of losses. It's one of the best teams that never made Omaha. I'm doing that from memory, but there's probably going to be an A&M fan in the chat here that might know that, but we'll see.
The record, Wichita State, they beat Michigan to win the whole thing.
That would have been in the 80s?
In 89. Rather, they beat Texas for the championship in 89.
Okay. Would that have been an Augie team? No, I think Augie was out in California
Fullerton.
At that
point. Yeah, he was at Fullerton.
Yeah. Yeah. But what I was going to say a minute ago, that's now, if you want to go ahead and grandfather Oklahoma in as an SEC team, that's now four straight series in the championship series where you've seen SEC on SEC. Now, Oklahoma was Big 12, of course, but the one team that crashed the party is about to join the SEC.
Crazy.
So it's going to be nuts. So I'll tell you what's going to be interesting. The scheduling going forward is going to be very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Because with 16 teams, it's going to be a case where the scheduling imbalance is going to get like the team that wins, it's going to be the team that doesn't draw, 14, 15, 16, some years. You don't always know who those are going to be coming in. But anyway, we're going to start an off-season baseball show. Hadn't quite gotten the plans together, but it's going to be the three of us. We got some ideas we're kicking around. So unlike past years where we just disappear on baseball till about March or April, which was not the plan, but we've gone from a two-man operation about 6 or 7 months ago to adding guys here quickly, which lets us cover a lot of other stuff. But we are going to be doing an SEC baseball show in the offseason, maybe even once a week. So if you guys want to keep tabs on what's going on, and I always say this, if you're new to our channel, like if you want to get stuff on Tennessee or Ole Miss or Arkansas or whoever, you're always going to find somebody in that market that knows your team better than we do.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to get a 30,000 foot view of guys that really watch and follow the league and try to do a job that's not clickbaitish or,
hot takes.
That's the term I'm looking for. That's just not us. We're trying to let you know what's going on and really dive into it and give you some analysis. So if you want to keep tabs on what's going on with the rest of the league, we're already doing off-season football and basketball shows. And if you haven't checked them out, please do, because I'm a big fan of the stuff we're doing. I'm not involved in the basketball show. I'll be involved in our basketball coverage during basketball season. But Blake and Max are doing an unbelievable job with the SEC basketball experience. Chase Robinson and I have started the weekly SEC football show, which has been fun. And we are going to come up with the equivalent of a baseball show between the three of us. We don't know what that's going to look like because we haven't had time to slow down and talk about it. But you got three guys here who love SEC baseball and are fired up about it. And now with the portal and coaching changes, there's always stuff going on. So I hope you guys, if you're listening and watching, hit the subscribe button, hit the like button, and enable your notifications. So when we run those again, there's a lot to keep up with when we're going to do draft coverage. We're thinking about doing a draft live stream in the first round. My wife might kill me. We'll see about that. If I can get out of that alive, then we may try to do it, because God knows I've been doing a lot of live streams at night lately. But that's something we're bouncing around. We're definitely going to have draft coverage. When Texas makes its coaching hire, we'll talk about that. And we're just going to be coming up with whatever we can come up with in the offseason between recruiting, draft, changes, maybe having coaches on, whatever that looks like. But really, really excited to be doing that, whatever it looks like. And Alfred, you've been tremendous help throughout the year. We improved your fashion taste at the very end with the hat there. And Graham, I didn't even know a few weeks ago, but reached out to me, expressed an interest in being part of the show. We glad we connected and made that happen, and really looking forward to you being a part of things going forward too.
Likewise. Can't wait.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Chris. Thank you so much. It was a great season. And Graham, thank you for hopping on. We're going to have a good off season. There's going to be a ton to talk about. I can't wait to continue it.
Yeah. Congratulations to the Tennessee Volunteers, your 2024 College World Series champions. For Graham Doty, for Alfred Esmond, I'm Chris Lee. We're Southeastern 14, presented by BetOnline. God bless you. Have a great night. Thank you for watching.